Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Here we go with the Wednesday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack. With me is Dan the Man. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, since it is Wednesday, there is a new blog up. Swing over there and check that out. But there's also various content added throughout the week. I think there was something else added there today as well. So get over there and check that out. But, of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and hit that link. Get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could give that a like while you're over there, well, we greatly appreciate that. There's also the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Dan and I are on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time, and Dan the Man is at?
Dan the Man with three E's.
So, Dan, I'm slowly but surely realizing that the Seattle Mariners are the most active team this offseason. You know, they went out last week and they shipped off Seth Smith to Baltimore to get Yovani Gallardo, a trade that I did absolutely hate. I'm not going to lie about that. Then they also shipped a pitcher, Nathan Carnes, to the Royals for Jared Bison. I had no problem with that move. I liked that. Then today, they start the day off by shipping off a couple of prospects, Luis Gohara and Thomas Burrows, to the Atlanta Braves. And in return, they got one of the Braves' higher prospects, Malik Smith. He was the big deal in the Craig Kimbrel trade when the Braves sent Kimbrel to the Padres. And Seattle also got right-handed pitcher Shea Smith in the deal. Or Shea Simmons, excuse me. Now, Smith wasn't a Mariner for very long as they turned around and they packed up Smith along with minor league infielder Carlos Vargas and minor league left-handed pitcher Ryan Yarbrough to the Tampa Bay Rays in return for Drew Smyly. So there's a ton of wheeling and dealing done here. And, you know, Dan, when they picked up Smith, I was kind of wondering what they were doing because basically he's the same player as Gerard Dyson. You know, it's just Dyson's got a little more experience. He's proven he can do it at a major league level. Smith struggled a little bit with the Braves last year, but, you know, that's to be expected when you kind of have small sample size theater, and he was banged up a little bit. 238 in 72 games, but he did steal 16 bases, and speed is his thing. I was a little surprised the Braves shipped him off for just two minor league prospects. But, you know, the Mariners swap him for a quality left-handed pitcher in Drew Smyly.
You're excited about this one?
Yeah, this one I like. I liked both deals. I mean, if you can get a guy, you know, the caliber of Smith, I did like it. You know, but then to flip him to Smyly, you know, they need quality pitching. You know, and Smyly did make 30 starts for Tampa Bay last year. I know he had some minor injuries, so he ended up with a pretty high ERA, 4.88. He was 7-12. But I think, you know, if he's healthy going in, you know, that's a better deal for Seattle. You know, I guess what I'm trying to figure out is their rotation is slowly but surely becoming really crowded. And, I'm wondering how they're going to, you know, how they're going to kind of shuffle this out. I mean, obviously, you know, there's no questions at the top. I mean, it's the king. Oh, excuse me. You know, it's the king at the very top of the rotation. Then, you know, you got to guess it's Iwakuma at number two. But after that, I mean, I don't really know. You know, they did pick up Chris Heston from the Giants. He was really good as a rookie. Didn't get a whole lot of starts in his second year. You know, you add Smiley to the mix. You got Gallardo, and then you also have James Paxton, who is one of those guys you've just been kind of waiting for to, you know, take over his spot. You know, Ariel Miranda made some starts for him last year. You know, you wonder how he factors in. You know, they have a few guys that, you know, it's going to be six or seven guys for five spots, you know, unless they're going to do the brilliant six-man rotation, which I would hate so much it wouldn't be funny. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm waiting to see how this shuffles out, or maybe they have another move in them. They're going to deal some, you know, another starting pitcher.
I would think so. I mean, isn't it that some wins the pitching?
Yeah. Well, I know Heston worked out of the bullpen with the Giants last year. I guess he could go back to that. You know, and I know, you know, Miranda has minor league options. Maybe they send him there and try to let him develop a little more. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm just kind of looking at it going, okay, well, that's cool. You know, how are you going to piece this together? And I get it. You need starting pitching to win. And, I like what they're doing with their rotation. I mean, I'm sure when – you know, we finally get around to it, you know, Mr. Fantasy will trash Felix Hernandez for being old and, you know, everything else he can think of. But that's, you know, we're used to that by now. So we'll see. But, I mean, so far they seem to be, on the right track, I guess you would call it. I mean, at least it's positive.
How do you feel about their chances in the West now?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing I've been trying to figure out. More and more, it's starting to look like maybe it's the Rangers that are the team that's going to drop out of the race. They haven't really done a ton this offseason. I mean, you hear their name associated with every free agent out there. For the longest time, they were the leaders to get Mike Napoli. Nothing happened. Now today I read that they're looking into the possibility of bringing in Mark Trumbo. And it just seems like they're doing a whole bunch of looking, and it's almost like they're trying to keep their name in the news so we don't forget who they are. But then they don't make any moves. So I don't know, what they're doing.
They really didn't make any moves last year and somehow crept up and stole the division.
Well, they did, they did bring in Ian Desmond, and that ended up being a really huge move for them. And then they went out and picked up Cole Hamels. They added Jonathan LaCroix in, the middle of the season. So that helped out, but I guess maybe it wouldn't be so bad, if they kind of go in as is, because it would finally force them to play their young prospects. We would finally get to see Joey Gallo full time. We'd probably finally get to see Ryan Rua full time, or we get to see your guy Jerks and Profar full time.
We've been waiting since what, 2012, 13? I don't remember.
Yeah, it seems like it's been a long time. That injury really set him back. He had that really bad injury. But Gallo's been a top prospect almost as long as Profar has, and it seems like they bring him up, he hits a couple home runs, and then his average plummets, and they send him back down. Also the big issue, of course, is the fact that he's a third baseman and he's not going to play third base full time until Adrian Beltre decides he's ready to give that up. But with Fielder gone, there is an opening at designated hitter and first base because Mitch Moreland is now a Red Sox. So you wonder if we'll see Gallo and Rua, you know, maybe splitting time there. And, you know, I know Profar played a little first base. He can play all over the infield. He's the definition of super utility. He's also played the outfield. But, kind of looking at their team, I mean, as it is now, the only really big weakness they seem to have is Carlos Gomez in center field, just because you don't know what you're going to get out of the guy. You know, he had such a down year last year and ended up being released by the Astros. I know he started off hot with the Rangers, but he cooled off rather quickly. They do have Delino DeShields behind him if something happens. And then, of course, you know, the weakness is always going to be anytime you have Sinshu Chu as a starter, you have to wonder how many games he's going to miss, because I can't remember the last time. I got to look up his stats here. I can't remember the last time the guy played, God, even 100 games in a season. It seems like he misses so many games. Let's see. Here you go. 2015, he had a pretty healthy year. He played 149 games. But last year, he played 48. So, you know, he always seems to manage to find an injury that's going to cost him games. And, you know, we'll have to see. I think part of that was the fact that I picked him up in our auction league. So I believe that was part of the reason he got injured, that has a tendency to happen. But, yeah, right now, I mean, they seem to be the odd team out. I mean, their rotation, you got Hamels and Darvish at the top, but that's really it at your rotation. I mean, the other guys looking for the final couple spots there are Martin Perez, Andrew Cashner, A.J. Griffin, and one of their prospects. What's this guy's first name here? Mike Hall's child. So, you know, obviously you're really good 1 and 2, but then 3, 4, and 5, you're going to be incredibly iffy. I know the other guy they've talked quite a bit about has been Jason Hamill. I don't know how big of an upgrade you think Hamill is, but I do think he's probably better than what they got, don't you?
Oh, I eat this chip.
So, then the Astros made some really good moves. You know, you just kind of wonder, you know, how things are going to shuffle out. But, you know, again, I mean, just kind of looking at it, you're like, oh, yeah, cool. Okay, you know, this is a fantastic, you know, this is a really good-looking team here in Houston. Of course, the Kiba Cup, you know, does Dallas Keuchel kind of come back to form? He kind of scuffled last year. If he bounces back, you know, we'll have to see if Lance McCullers can stay healthy. I think they overpaid a little bit when they brought, when they brought Morton in. I know they gave him that a pretty big two-year deal, and he hadn't really done much, but you know they must have saw something. So it should be really competitive at the top there, and I guess Dan, the question I kind of want to have you address is, you know, Mike Trout's the MVP. How far are the Angels out of this division?
Well, you know, they should have another winner next year, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, to be fair, they should get some of their pitching back. You know, that staff was really wiped out by injury last year. So, we got to see if some of it comes back healthy. But, you know, even so, you know, the team isn't hugely overly impressive. You know, and I just wonder, you know, how much longer can the media guys keep pumping Trout up when he's just going to be on such a pathetically bad team? I mean, we all know he didn't deserve the MVP, but they gave it to him because they slurp up everything he does. He was not the most valuable player. And again, there is a difference between being the most valuable and the best player. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. But yeah, I don't know. To me, they seem like they're still a long way away from competing in this division, and, you know, Oakland, we, you know, do you even count Oakland anymore? I mean, they're kind of lost as well. So, but I did see today the A's have apparently agreed to bring in Santiago Castilla on a 2-year deal or so to add to their bullpen. So they're adding relievers, right?
They should be. Well, they need to, right?
Yeah, well, you know, they need, I guess at that point in time, you need all the help you can get. You know, you just kind of, you know, you kind of looked at it and it's like, okay, you know, that's kind of cool. So, you know, we'll see how that works out. But yeah, you know, I think the Mariners have improved. Have they improved enough to win the division? I don't know. You know, it's going to be interesting, but I found a fun article that I had to go over here with you because, oh, they use quite a bit of the stats that like to tick me off. And, they have, here's the title, Dan. It's, you know, it's MLB's best team. And then it's like, hint, not the Cubs. So as I look through it here, they decide that it's the Dodgers who are the best team in baseball. Now, they go through the comparisons here, and I don't know why they chose to start with shortstop, but they did. They like Corey Seager over Addison Russell, mainly because Seager's WAR was 5.2 and Russell's was 3.6. Now, you and I both know this is the stupidest stat in probably baseball history, but they continue to throw it out there. You know, I believe these guys are a little more even than that, and while I may give Seager an edge, it's just a slight edge because Seager may be the better hitter, but Russell is probably twice the fielder and does seem to have a knack to come through in the clutch. You know, and obviously Russell is a little hidden on a team full of superstars, where Seager really is the Dodger superstar right now. You know, rookie of the year, somehow got nominated for MVP, even though I don't think he was a top three type of MVP guy. But well, you know, just one of those things. I mean, how do you feel, you know, Peterson to Russell?
Which Peterson? I was kind of gone for a little bit there.
Or sorry, I got ahead of myself there. Corey Seager to Addison Russell.
I mean, if you could combine them, they'd be the perfect guy, wouldn't they?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I mean, it would work out quite well. You know, like I said, I mean, I lean towards Seager myself, just a little bit though. Let me bring in a third party here and see how this works out for us. So, Mr. Fantasy, you going with Corey? Are you going with Corey Seager? Or are you going with Addison Russell?
I'm going with Seager. I think I don't know that the defensive disparity is as much as you think it is between the two guys, but Corey Seager, I think, is a much better hitter.
So, all right. Yeah, this is very odd just the way they do it because they go into center field next. Obviously, it's Jock Peterson for the Dodgers, who they have listed as a 3.9 WAR against the Cubs center fielders, who are now John Jay and Albert Almora, who have a 1.2 WAR. Obviously, it's a little unfair because neither Jay nor Almora played full-time last year. You know, this is kind of a push here as well. I mean, Peterson's a solid player, but he strikes out way too much, doesn't hit for a high average. You know, we don't really know what Almora can do as a full-time guy yet. So I guess, just kind of by that, you got to give it to Peterson. But I don't know there, Dan. Where are you on this one?
I mean, at the moment, you, as far as you know, you have to go with Peterson.
So, you know, the Mr. Fantasy, are you on that those lines as well?
Yeah, I mean, Peterson is, you know, he's got problems with his bat, but he's a plus defender, right? He covers enough ground. I don't know enough about the other two, so there's more of an unknown. So I think I would still go, you know, I think you got to go with Peterson in that situation. It may shake out later that, you know, Elmora is better than what's advertised right now, but you just don't know yet.
Yeah, and now this one is interesting because they combine the starting pitchers here, and this gives the Dodgers a huge advantage, 21.3 to 17.4 in WAR. Now, I think if they would have broke this down individually, the Cubs actually would have won this category out because obviously Clayton Kershaw is the guy who accounts for 8 points on that 21.4. So, you know, while Kershaw is probably the best pitcher out of the 10 that would be in the rotation, when does the next Dodger guy fill in? Because I'm probably not taking one over Lester. I'm probably not taking one over Arrieta. I'm not taking one over Kyle Hendricks. So what, the next Dodger pitcher comes in at 4? Or are you guys jumping up to take Rich Hill? Are you jumping up to take Rich Hill over one of the Cubs starters?
Yeah, run through their rotation for me real quick, just to make sure. I know Rich Hill, but for some reason I'm having trouble with the other three guys as I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, well, oddly, the funny thing here is the guy who wrote this article only lists three starters for the Dodgers and doesn't actually list any Cubs. He lists Rich Hill, Clayton Kershaw, and Julio Urias. But, you know, obviously there's, you know, Scott Kazmir would be a fourth. And then depending on the situation, you know, you're looking at a Brandon McCarthy or maybe a Hyunjin Ryu. I don't know who he counted because he doesn't say.
Yeah. Well, obviously, when you look at it, Rich Hill had a phenomenal year last year. And, I mean, you kept waiting for him to come down to earth, and he never really seemed to. You know, he pitched really well in the, you know, the majority of the season. The other guy's a youngster. I mean, we just got our first glimpse of him. It's kind of hard to put him in that category. What is he, 19-year-old kid last year? I don't know if he's 20 yet, but he's super young. He's got a ton of potential. He was rumored to be as part of a package for Chris Sale with the White Sox at some point. I think the trading deadline or something last year. But yeah, it's really hard. Rich Hill has really 1 year. I thought he was done in the majors for a little bit there, and he just kind of turned it around. But I don't know how you could rate them better if you look at overall, you know, 1 through 5 with that starting five. You've got potential. You've got the best pitcher in baseball, and then you've got a lot of nothing. If you look at the numbers that the Cubs rotation put up 1 through 4, they're, you know, even with Kershaw in there, their numbers are better.
Well, that's why I was baffled. Dan, where are you on this one? You like the Dodgers staff better?
No.
I was baffled here because, yeah, Kershaw's war is like an 8+. And yet as a team, they're only a 23. And honestly, he does not list one Cubs starter. So I'm guessing this guy must live on the West Coast. Dan, I'm interested to know how you react to this one because first base, he gives the edge to the Cubs. Anthony Rizzo at 4.9 to your guy Adrian Gonzalez at 1.5. Are you happy or sad about this?
I would say a little bit of both. But I think with the youth that Rizzo has over Gonzalez is going to make him the better option.
Just the fact that, you know, Gonzalez is going to be 35. You know, Mr. Fantasy, I assume you're on the Rizzo bandwagon here as well.
Yeah, because, I mean, Adrian, you know, Gonzalez has been a nice player, but like you said, he's getting up there. Well, do you know what his power numbers were? How many home runs? Because I think it was 20 last year.
Let me double check here real quick.
Because I'm thinking for some reason I got it that he was in the team, that his average was still decent last year. He had a good average, but how many?
He hit 285, 90 RBIs, and 18 home runs.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, he didn't hit 20. I mean, his numbers are solid, but, yeah, Rizzo was a beast. And I have to imagine at this point in the career that Rizzo's a much better defender.
Yeah, Gonzalez can still pick it. I mean, Rizzo is really good, but Gonzalez can still pick it. Defensively, I would probably rate them pretty close to even. You know, obviously Rizzo is a little more athletic, getting to, you know, the foul balls and you know, some of the grounders that probably would be out of Gonzalez's reach, but not a ton. I think, yeah, at the plate, Rizzo really kind of has kind of distanced himself there at this point in their careers. Not that Gonzalez wasn't great, a few years ago, but, you know, 35 is 35.
Yeah, I'm still surprised, though, that the WAR number's that great between the two, you know? I mean, that was a big number, the difference. I would have thought it would be a little closer. I think that Rizzo's much better, but I wouldn't think that it was by that wide of a margin.
It's a made-up number anyways. I mean, you can plug in any number you want there. How much closer you want it, we can do that right now. It's literally just an estimated stat. You want it closer? You want it 2.5 maybe instead of 1.5? We could do that. So, second base, right now second base is heavily slanted to the Cubs. For some reason, he attempts to merge this into multiple players. The Cubs, obviously, it's Ben Zobis and Javi Baez. He threw Tommy La Stella there for some reason. I guess he needed to bring the Cubs' WAR down a little. It ended up being 3-1 for the Cubs to 1-7 for the Dodgers. The Dodgers case, of course, he's going with Enrique Hernandez and Chris Taylor. This would change a whole lot if they actually go out and add Brian Dozier, but the teams are at an impasse there. Dan, are you siding with the Cubs' decided advantage there, Dan?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we don't even know if TK or Taylor have that job next year.
Yeah. Mr. Fantasy, I assume you're on the boat here as well.
Yeah, I'm on board. That's the right way to go.
So now third base is another pretty easy decision here. Chris Bryant for the Cubs, 5.7 WAR. Justin Turner for the Dodgers, surprisingly 3.9 is what they had him at. Again, made up stats, so we can make it as close as we want. Let's call it 5.7 to 5.6 if we want to. But easily, Bryant is the better player here, right, Dan? You're on board with the guy who got 29 to 30 first place votes in the MVP?
Oh, yeah. Hands down.
I know, Mr. Fantasy, this is tough for you because Hawk Harrelson thought Todd Frazier was Chris Bryant's equal, but I assume you're siding with Chris Bryant as well.
Yeah, I am, but I just no slight to – you know, the Dodgers option, he had a really nice year, and he's a nice player, but third base right now in the National League.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with Justin Turner. You know, I mean, he had a nice year. Obviously, he got paid really well for it, but he's not Chris Bryant. So even though the Dodgers are the better team, we've given quite a few categories for the Cubs here. We move on to left field. The Cubs have a 3.0 WAR advantage with Kyle Schwarber over 1.6 as they go with Andrew Tolles and Andre Ethier in left field for the Dodgers. If Schwarber was healthy and probably played, this would probably be a landslide for the Cubs. Obviously his only weakness is he's a horrible defender, but, you know, that doesn't matter in today's baseball as long as you get home runs. Dan, are you siding with Schwarber here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and Mr. Fantasy, you like Schwarber over, technically it should just be Andrew Tolles. I don't know what Andre Ethier's doing in this equation. So,
you know, it's funny when you're talking about, to me, when you're talking about you know, him playing in the field, Schwarber. I just envisioned the movie or the scene from Moneyball where Hatterberg at first base and they're talking to him in the clubhouse. And he goes, so what scares you about playing first base? He goes, the ball being hit in my general direction. And he goes, no, really. He goes, no, really, that's what scares me. I kind of feel like this Kyle Schwarber in the outfield. He's, you know, he's just so bad of a defender. But, yeah, I think even with this defending, that's where you gotta go. But that's what I see. I don't know why. I just pictured that.
All right. Now this may be the toughest category to call here. Catcher. The Dodgers rate out WAR at 3.6. They combine Yasmani Grandal and Austin Barnes because Carlos Ruiz has moved on. The Cubs came out at 3.1 with Wilson Contreras and Miguel Montero. Now, for me, I think Grandal is the best of these four catchers right now. But if you're combining this as a group and I've got to pick a group, I'm taking Contreras and Montero over Grandal and Barnes. Barnes is horrible. Dan, where are you at?
I mean, I would say they're almost equal, but, you know, I would say you have to lean with the Cubs because you have to pick a group.
You know, and then, yeah, Mr. Fantasy, you know, the same boat. You know, this guy went with the group. He didn't go with one guy. So you got to give me the group. You like Grandal and Barnes over Contreras and Montero?
I'd rather have 5 days of Grandal and punt with the 2 days of, you know, whoever, you know, then go the other way. I think there's so much Grandal's better than everybody by enough where that would be the way I'd go. I would rather have Grandal and make, you know, and then whoever I put for the other 2 days doesn't matter.
So, well, it would be Austin Barnes. It's not a choice there.
Yeah.
You're given Austin Barnes for the other 2 days.
I know, but whoever it is, whatever backup you have, Austin Barnes in this case, but Grandel's you know, who I'd want. So I would go Grandal. I'd take the Dodgers in that instance.
All right. So then we go to right field, and surprisingly, the Cubs and Jason Hayward squeaked this one out, 3.5 to Yasiel Puig and 3-2 for the Dodgers. So now we're in another even category. I'm realizing here that he's projecting it off what he thinks will be next year's stat line, and he actually has Hayward hitting .269. I don't know if I believe that. I also don't know if I believe that Puig will actually be the Dodgers starting right fielder. Boy, you know, if I had to choose here, I may take Hayward just because he's a better defender, and I would kind of like that out there to save some runs for me. But it's not by much. Dan, where are you at if you got to choose between these two?
I'm going with Hayward simply for the defense.
So, Mr. Fantasy, where are you? You're going to go with Puig? Be the different guy and go with Puig. They do have Puig. They have put Puig projected to hit .284 next year. Of course, it's probably being a Brewers uniform, but that's a different story.
Yeah. You know, my problem with Puig is I just don't like him as a player. I haven't. He's been the guy who came out with all the hype and nothing really happened, and it just seems like he's been an okay player. And as much as I don't believe that Hayward's going to hit where he's going to hit, how many defenders are better than Hayward right now in the game? And just for the exact reason that you would, I would want Hayward out there to save some runs. I know how much ground he can cover. I know that, you know, he's a gold glove outfielder, a plus-plus defender. I would rather have him and not deal with the baggage that comes with Puig.
So then the guy wraps it up with the bullpens. The Dodgers win 6.0 to 5.5. You know, I don't have any problem with this one. I think Kenley Jansen is one of the best closers in the game. That's where he really rates this on. While Wade Davis is good, he's coming off a couple of injuries last season, so you gotta make sure he's healthy there. You know, I am interested to see how the Dodgers replace Joe Blanton, or if they end up bringing Blanton back. He really established himself as a setup guy. You know, Hector Rondon, Pedro Strop really never found that groove, and now Mike Montgomery's in the starting rotation, so he's not there to bail out the bullpen. I lean for the Dodgers here, Dan. What side are you on?
For me, I think you could just flip a coin and take who you can get.
So, and then Mr. Fantasy, where you come in on this?
I think there's still a lot of unknown on both sides in the bullpen, so it makes it tough. But, you know, it looks like he's making his decision. You're going between Wade Davis and Kenley Jensen is really where where you're going. And I'm not sure where I would go with that. Like you said, Davis had some injury issues, but he's been lights out for a while now. Yeah, I can go either way. I'm gonna go with Davis in this one just to be the different guy. But I could buy either side of the argument. But my question is, what are they doing with those other guys?
Yeah, that's the thing we don't kind of know just yet. The Dodgers do have Grant Dayton, who popped up as a pretty solid setup guy. But it's 1 year. Bullpens are so in flux. He leans on the Dodgers here because Jansen's WAR was 2.4. So that's kind of what he's going with. Oddly, as much as they list the Dodgers better on paper, I believe we sided with more Cubs.
Yeah, unless they make some, unless there's more changes to come, and I know the Brian Dozier thing's been a work in progress, and whatever reason they can't get on the same page, the Twins and the Dodgers, but as things stand now, the world champions haven't done anything to make me think that they're the world champions. They haven't really, there's not, other than their closer, what have they turned over? Not a whole lot to speak of. And they replaced him with a quality guy. So how can you say on paper somebody's better at this point in time? Cubs made short work of the Dodgers in the playoffs just, a couple months ago.
Yeah, that's the odd thing. I mean, obviously, center field is a question mark because we have to see what Almora can do. But, he's been a top prospect in the organization for a long time, just like Peterson was for the Dodgers when he took over in center. So, you got to give these guys a look. I mean, do any of us think Hayward could be as bad as he was last year offensively?
It sounds like he's doing the right things to get things under control, that he's gone out there and he's dedicated his offseason to hitting and learning how to hit. And he's got some good people, it sounds like, teaching him and helping him redefine his swing. So, no, I don't think he can be as bad. Do I think he's a 269 hitter next year? Probably not. You get to go from 190 or whatever he was to almost 270, probably is not going to happen. But if you get 240 out of him with that defense, are you excited to get 40 points higher from him? Probably.
Yeah, I think if you get a Dan, if you got a 40-point jump, would you be happy out of Jason Hayward?
Oh, yeah. But, at the same time, if he weren't in that outfield, Dexter Fowler wouldn't have got the contract he did in St. Louis, and I don't think they would have won the World Series.
Yeah, and that, Mr. Fantasy, he is a 262 career hitter, even with the bad year last year. If he gets back to that, that's 32 points higher than last year. I think what I would like to see is I'd really like to see him get himself back into double-digit home runs. He only had 7 last year. If he hits 262 and says 15 home runs, that's a huge plus, right?
Oh, absolutely it is. But I just have a hard time believing that he's going to get back up to those numbers after last year. You just don't see guys have tanked that much and then rebound. Give me an example of a guy who started batting under 200 and then was able to recover and get back up on his – to respectability, and it just doesn't seem to happen.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
But that's huge.
Who would qualify there? you know, it's hard to hard to figure out, you know, who the spots.
You know, I'm thinking about, you know, and just because this is a, just the one of the most recent ones for me as a White Sox fan is, you know, when they got Adam Dunn, and you look at the numbers he put up when he was, you know, Brave and then a Red, and then he comes to Chicago and he tanks and he never recovered once he got to that, you know, those bad numbers. And, you know, and
okay,
I just think of anybody who's ever.
I just want to know if you would accept this one. This is Dan's guy. In 2014, Jeff Francoeur hit .083. In 2015, he hit .272. Does that count?
Yeah, but how much, how many at-bats did he have in the .083?
Well, he actually had 10 games when he hit .083. He had 83 games when he hit .272. Here's a better example for you. Well, here, I'll give you this one. Danny Espinosa, 2014, he hit .219 with 8 homers, 27 RBIs in 114 games. 2015, he hit .246 with 10 homers and 29 RBIs in 93 games. He played in 193 games. That would be huge.
Yeah, he was deep in the playoffs then, huh? So what did the average go from? It went from what to what?
It went from oops, wrong guy. 219 to 246.
Yeah, I mean that's 30 points.
Okay, well,
that's
how about this
one?
How about 238 to 278? Is that a better one for you?
Yeah, that's 40 points. So, yeah, who is that?
Cargo in 2014 at 238. He had just 11 homers and 38 RBIs. He struggled with some injuries that year. Bounced back in 2015, still had injuries, but hit .278 with 26 bombs and 64 RBIs.
So it has happened, but I just have a hard time believing that you'll rebound that much.
So, well, here's a big, huge one. I think Cubs fans would jump up and down if this one happened. In 2014, Jason Kipnis hit .240. With 6 home runs and 41 RBIs, just so you know, he was on my fantasy team that year. So I think that's where a lot of this come from. In 2015, he hit .326 with 6 home runs and 39 RBIs. So.
And who was that? McGee? Broke out.
Jason Kipnis.
Jason Kipnis. Okay.
So.
I remember that. you were the killer of his season.
Yes, I was.
I remember
you telling me what a steal he was because I got him in like the third or the fourth round, and even you thought that was a great steal, and boy, did he stink. I couldn't even trade him to Dan.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, I had just called. I wanted to see, please, how you thought of, what you thought of the Mariners trade, the two trades today, and you kind of, I got the tail end of it. And then the Broncos going defensive when they hired their head coach. And I was a little surprised.
Everybody went defense. The Bills went defense.
That case.
They switched. So.
Yep. But I was shocked more that they did, considering they had no offense this year and that they weren't going offensively.
Yeah, you know, defense seems to be the way teams are going. You know, I believe the majority of the hires have been defensive guys, and you know, we'll have to see how the rest of the hires go.
Mm-hmm.
So,
my dog is excited. I'm home, and she's trying to get my attention. So I'm gonna let you guys run.
All right.
Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Aren't we letting him go?
Yeah, either or. I think he feels better if he thinks he's letting us run. So, you know, that kind of works out for, you know, works out for both sides that way. So, you know how this. Now, Dan, I was wondering if you caught this story. Did you see that? LeBron James is upset because he doesn't think he's being officiated fairly.
Why is he not getting enough calls?
Yes, he believes he is not getting enough calls, and oddly, they showed a couple highlights last night where he missed some pretty easy shots because he thought he got fouled, and like the first one is clearly not a foul. The second one was just kind of borderline, and it was probably a call someone like James should have gotten. But the first one, he actually had a fit on, ended up getting himself a technical foul, and he wasn't fouled. It was just like, dude, come on, you know, I mean, you're really, really reaching here, and I just, you know, he's a great player and everything, Dan, but God, I am so sick of just listening to this guy cry about everything. You know, if it's not, you know, if it's not foul calls, it's the schedule. And if it's not the schedule, then the All-Star break is too short. And, you know, he wants to spend time with his family, but then he goes to Miami on All-Star break instead of spending time with his family. I don't get this guy. It literally seems like he's just a prima donna that you can't make happy.
Yeah, I mean, if I were in a conference room with, or the press room when that was kind of said, I don't know if I'd be called upon, but, you know, my question would have been, did Jordan do this? That's every time he complains about something.
You know, and that, you know, that just seems
Jordan
to be the weird thing. Right, you know, and I don't remember a lot of these guys. I mean, occasionally something would come up, but, you know, I don't remember Jordan or Bird or Magic or, and, you know, even kind of, you know, working back, you know, Kobe didn't cry like this. You know, it's just like everything is such a, you know, such an issue to him that I just can't, you know, it makes it hard to root for him. It really does.
Well, I mean, you know, for me, I definitely jumped on that wagon after spending some time in Miami and getting to see him play live. And then I would say the most disappointing finals I had ever seen was him being carried off the court for a cramp. And, I mean, that was pretty much the end of it. He didn't want to win.
Yeah, it's so weird because it's almost like you just wait to see what he's going to bitch about next. You know, what's his next complaint? You know, and the weird part is, for whatever reason, the NBA seems to jump right in and fix whatever issues he has. You know, I mean, he cried about the All-Star break and they made it longer. You know, he cried about the scheduling, and they fixed it in the new CBA. You know, so now you've just got to assume that all his crying here is going to get him more foul calls, isn't it?
Pretty much up until the finals. Or through the finals.
It's baffling, you know, listening to him. You know, and even like the other great players, like I don't hear Russell Westbrook cry. And he goes to the hoop as much as LeBron does. And it's funny because I keep hearing the guys try to make excuses, you know, well, LeBron should get these foul calls because even though, you know, he's 6'8 and 260, you know, he still gets fouled like everybody else. Well, yeah, but, you know, the highlights you showed of him getting fouled weren't really fouls. So you just want the ref to blow the whistle because he's LeBron?
Well, you know, and it was funny. I remember last season watching a national broadcast, and maybe it was during the playoffs, because obviously during the playoffs they have their, you know, former NBA referee with a suit on in a studio booth somewhere, and them discussing how guys get, you know, how the calls happen and whatnot, and, you know, him, the one announcer, flat out saying, well, you know, if I was still reffing,
I would have made the call. But then you have the other guy, the, you know, more analytical guy who said, well, no, the rule is this. And he goes, it shouldn't matter who the player is or who the ref is or what side of town you're in, or what time of the day it is, what side of the town, what side of the country you're in. What should matter is the rule is the rule. And if you get fouls, you get fouls. You shouldn't grab more fouls because you're LBJ or Dwayne Wade or Carmelo. You know, and you shouldn't not get the call, you know, the foul call because you're Nick Young. You know, I'm just a small name to throw out there.
Yes. Swaggy P. Oh.
But yeah, so I mean, even, you know, I think even the guys in, you know, the announcers, the former players, you know, even Rich, I don't think a lot of them, you know, they're not going to speak out because then obviously I wouldn't want to lose that job. It's a pretty sweet gig itself. But, you know, I think the time will come eventually when you hear a lot more people speaking out on the hypocrisy of the NBA's referees. Because, I mean, you know, we talk about it all the time. The NBA is literally the only league where the outcome of the game can 100% be determined by what the referees do. And there's nothing you can do about it. There's no repercussions on their end. There's no, you know, you can't take back a game. You remember the stuff last year with, you know, Kevin Durant and Oklahoma. Oh yeah, well, we decided that there should have been fouled. But yet they still do like the replay the ancient ass way where, well, let's pull out a monitor for the referees on the court. No, you should have two guys and wherever you're headquartered sitting, you know, not two guys, but a room full of people watching everything and breaking it down to the moment and making sure that everything is done correctly, not this, you know, BS where, well, we feel like following them, so we'll follow them. I think that's, you know, one of the negatives and the drawbacks with the NBA.
Yeah, well, you know, the weirdest thing for me is, you know, the NBA games are long enough as it is. You know, and I know, you know, like you and I have brought it up quite a bit that, you know, nobody ever complains about pace of play there. But it is far worse than baseball between the timeouts and the TV timeouts and anything else that frickin' goes on there. Boy, if there's more foul calls, that's just going to make the games even longer. That's what we want.
Yeah. Well, but why would we want the game longer when we want everything shorter, LeBron?
Right. Yeah, you know, it's just kind of like, give me a break. But, all right, since we are talking about it, here's the NBA schedule for tonight. The New York Knicks at the Philadelphia Sixers have actually already started. The Knicks are up 20-18 in that game, and I believe Derrick Rose did start for the Knicks. The first game on ESPN tonight has the Memphis Grizzlies at the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Houston Rockets are on a 9-game winning streak. They're at the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Washington Wizards are at the Boston Celtics. The Orlando Magic are at the Los Angeles Clippers. And the night wraps up in the NBA. I expect there will be a lot of foul calls in this game now that he cried about it. The Cleveland Cavaliers are at the Portland Trail Blazers. So, Dan, you did go 2-2 last night. Oddly enough, you lost your two NBA picks. Milwaukee got by San Antonio by a couple points, and the Lakers laid an egg last night for you. So let's give you a couple more NBA games, see if you do a little better today. How about the first Mickey Mouse Network game, the Memphis Grizzlies at the Oklahoma City Thunder? Who you like there?
I got Russell Westbrook in his 800th triple-double in a row.
Yes, 800th or 8,000th. So,
whichever.
All right, well, let's have a little fun with this one there. How about we'll go out west, but we'll go with the Orlando Magic at the Los Angeles Clippers. Who you got winning that game?
The Clippers. I thought you said the Lakers.
No, not this time. So let's slide over and see what the NHL schedule looks like here. Oh, it's kind of a short night in the NHL. There's only four games, but it is, Dan. Don't forget, it is Rivalry Wednesday. We have the Florida Panthers at the New York Islanders, the Montreal Canadiens at the Winnipeg Jets. The Rivalry Wednesday game, Dan, and start thinking about it because this will be the one you're picking. The Pittsburgh Penguins at the Washington Capitals. And then the night wraps up with the San Jose Sharks at the Calgary Flames. All right, Dan, Alex Ovechkin looking for his 1,000th career NHL point tonight. Do the Capitals get a win, and does he get the point? And I won't hold the point pick against you. That's why I went with the win stuff first. You got the Capitals beating the Penguins at home on Rivalry Wednesday?
Ooh, I might actually just stay home and watch this game. After the playoffs last year, I would say this definitely fits into the rivalry. And I think the Caps have something to prove aside from Ovechkin's goal. So, yes, they're going to win, and he's going to get his 1,000th goal.
Point, not goal, just point.
Point.
Big difference there. He had 1,000 goals, we'd probably really be talking about it. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that actually should be a pretty good game. I think it's I just clicked off it. Let me go back to it. It is an 8 o'clock start on the good old NBC Sports Network. So that may be something to take a little bit of a look at tonight.
Oh, it's a late one. I might
go
to the gym now and get in before it's, how that goes.
Yeah, I was a little surprised it's such a late start. The game's in Washington. You know, 8 o'clock is a little bit of a late go there for them, but...
Well, not only that, it's 9 o'clock in Washington.
Oh, no, it's actually 8 o'clock Eastern time, so it's 7 o'clock our time. Normally, they give the... They knock the time up for me, but this time they didn't change it, so... So, yeah, 7 o'clock for you and I, that's not too bad. So yeah, I have to definitely take in some of that game. That should be a pretty good game. Should be a really good game. So.
No, I mean, both teams are phenomenal. You know, the Penguins are fun to watch, and they're the Capitals.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely and like you said, with the playoffs from last year, that should be a pretty big rivalry.
Yeah, I would say the only negative with the Penguins winning the Cup last year was the fact that New Era, my favorite company, didn't do any Penguins Stanley Cup caps.
So, all right, well, that means Dan and I are taking off for the day. We quick thanks to Mr. Fantasy for stopping by and helping us out with that other little thing we had going on there. Don't worry, Dan and I are back tomorrow at 5:30, so you can swing back to check that out. But you know the deal while we're away. Get over to sportstimeradio.com. Check out all the content there. Follow the link over to the Facebook page. Give that a like, please. We'd appreciate that. The Twitter feed, at sportstimeradio. Now, Dan's picks come up there, or they come up at Dan Z Man. Remember, there's three E's in that. Going with the Thunder and the Clippers in the NBA tonight, and his big pick, the Washington Capitals over the Pittsburgh Penguins in the NHL. Let Dan know what you think. As always, thanks for listening live, and don't forget, you can get the podcast anytime you want now at tunein.com.